way to Rebalt and more. The latest this Monday on the difficult name change process at Duval Schools. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation with 90 Forward on school renamings and more. Give us a call with your thoughts. It's 549-2937. Then later, Mayor Curry is letting Duval County's mask mandate expire this week. Business owners like the change. Public health experts do not. We'll take a closer look at what it means for you. First, though, here are the latest numbers on the pandemic. Over the weekend, the number of COVID cases in Florida increased by nearly 5,000. The cumulative total since the pandemic began is now over 2 million. Deaths rose again over the weekend. The death toll in the state now stands at 33,178. And more than 5.6 million Florida residents have received at least one dose of a coronavirus vaccine. Now, here's some more news for you. Starting today, anyone 40 or older is eligible as of today in Florida to be vaccinated. So if you are 40 and up and you've been waiting, go get your vaccine. Starting next week, all adults will be eligible in the state. Anyone 18 or older can be vaccinated. Now, later in the hour, we're going to talk a little bit about Duval County's mask mandate. It expires at the end of March. Some local businesses will continue to ask employees and customers to keep wearing masks, but they really won't be able to enforce that necessarily. We're going to take a look at that in a few minutes. First, though, our top story. The Duval County Public Schools this week is continuing what's turned into a very intense discussion about renaming 9 public schools. And this discussion has gotten international attention. Most of the school names have associations with the Confederacy, like Lee High School, for example, named after the Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Dr. Kimberly Allen is executive director of 90 Forward, a local organization working to end racism in the city. She's on the line with some thoughts about this whole process. Dr. Allen, good to talk to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks so much for having me here.
And as we talk about renaming Lee High School and other schools, let us know your thoughts. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. So, Dr. Allen, 90 Forward is the area code of the city, 904-WORD, and you are a group of volunteers trying to make this city more inclusive, to end racism in Jacksonville. You've grown a lot over the years. And let's begin by stating that you are in support of renaming the 9 public schools in Duval County. Can you talk a little bit more about 904-WORD's mission and why you are taking this stance?
Absolutely, Melissa. 90 Forward is an organization. Now, you know, we're mostly run by volunteers, but our key, you know, outlook and vision is an end to racism here in Jacksonville. And we do that by having, you know, very candid and open dialogue, helping to build those trusting relationships between individuals and entities, and ultimately just working together to bridge those gaps and work towards some collective action.
Right. Now, recently, the Duval County School Board held a public meeting over at Lee High School, and people both for and against the name change had their say. This was painful for a lot of people. Some of the comments were pretty inflammatory. And so as the school board continues this process, how do you see Jacksonville dealing with this, particularly given that this whole matter has received national and even international media coverage?
Yes, I think we have a real opportunity here in Jacksonville to really make a statement that racism is not going to be tolerated in our city, and that we are going to take the necessary steps and be models for other cities who are doing similar things to start with this step to one of many steps toward having conversations about race and how we can improve race relations in our city.
You actually at 90 Forward have this game you've developed. It's a card game. It's a game of race cards. And it, you know, it's a play on words when people say someone, oh, you're playing the race card. You have these race cards which are intended to spark dialogue. And I just so happen to have a deck of these cards. Okay. So when you take out the race card, the deck of race cards that 90 Forward has created, I'm just going to pull one randomly, okay, out of the deck, Dr. Mm-hmm. Allen. Mm-hmm. And on the front it says race cards, and then on the back, there's a question. And I'm just going to pull one. I'm sorry. I'm struggling with these cards. I got to get them out of the little box. Okay. I pulled one randomly out of the deck. And the question that you just ask the question of your group and then you discuss. Here's this random question. Do you ever feel like you're being stereotyped because of race? And then it goes on to say, do you ever stereotype people? So you developed this deck of race cards to get people talking about race.
Absolutely. It was born out of us having dialogue just like this one when we initially got started back in 2015, and us asking each other the questions very similar, if not the same, as a lot of those questions that are on the cards that you have in front of you. And so we knew that others wanted to be able to have that same conversation, and that was how the race cards were born.
And why do you think it's so difficult for communities like Jacksonville to have open discussions about these matters? I mean, these cards are a great tool because this is always a fraught, painful discussion.
It is. And I think there's a lot of fear and hesitancy because people don't want to be labeled a racist, or people aren't really comfortable having these conversations because I think, quite frankly, Southern hospitality has made us very leery of disagreeing publicly with each other or having an exchange that leads to fruitful action together. And so I think people have just become accustomed to, you know, pleasantries, but not really wanting to, you know, be labeled or come off as offensive or offend others. And I think that's just a part of Southern culture in general that has led us to be afraid.
Interesting. All right, let's go to your calls for 90 Forward as we talk about the renaming of Lee High School and eight other local high school and school names. 549-2937, give us a call. Tom is on the west side. Good morning, Tom.
Ah, good morning, you too. I just wanted to say that this has become more than just an antiseptic discussion of school names. The outpouring of student sentiment at the last meeting was very heartfelt and touching. And also, we've got to remember that Amy Donofrio was removed from her position for supporting this, and that needs to be addressed, too. I mean, there is a lot of human drama in this story, and we need to move forward on this.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, Dr. Allen, let's talk about Lee in particular. The students had planned a walkout, but they were prevented from doing so. They were going to protest a teacher being reassigned because she displayed a Black Lives Matter flag, Ms. Donofrio. That is against school policy. And the school system noted they also prevented people in Neptune Beach from flying a Blue Lives Matter flag at a sporting event. And so that gives a little bit of the backstory to what's going on at Lee High School. Of course, it is named after the Confederate general, and it does now have a 70% African-American student body.
Right, absolutely. And quite frankly, your caller, I completely agree with. The students have spoken, and they are really passionate about ensuring that they are entering a building where they feel welcome and supported. And, you know, we've had this discussion internally, and the question becomes, you know, if students are saying that they don't feel welcome or supported and someone displays that in a way that goes against the rule, then what is the acceptable way to display that this is a place where you are welcome, accepted, and supported?
I want to give voice to the group of alumni in opposition to this. They created a website called SaveTheSchoolNames.org, and they've spoken out about their historical and personal memories of attending Lee. And, you know, it was desegregated, we should note, in 1971, named after the Confederate general in the Jim Crow era in the 1920s. So what would you say to those alumni out there that have spoken out against these proposed name changes?
I would say, one, the memories that you hold of your school do not disappear because the name changes. But what I will say is that in recollecting history, we have to be willing to confront the parts of history that are antiquated and offensive. And we have to be willing to have the conversation about who in particular, you know, Robert E. Lee was the example we're going with, who he was and how he really worked to oppress an entire population of people. And so, you know, changing the names in no way, shape, or form reduces those memories or takes those memories away. But it does allow for a new generation of students to feel welcome, heard, and accepted in their building.
Lisa in St. Augustine. Good morning, Lisa. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Briefly, just to put this in context, why would you name a school Adolf Hitler High School, home of the fighting Gestapo?
Yeah. Thank you for that, Lisa.
It's the
same
thing. It's like especially with a 70% black student population, it is just appalling that you would maintain a name that reflects violence and oppression and genocide. So to put it into context, you know, the white, you know, alumni are talking about, just to help them understand, why would you do that?
Right. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. You know, for people who might be offended by that analogy, it's a fair analogy, Dr. Allen. Slavery was a unique evil. It's fair to compare it to the Nazis and the Holocaust. And of course, after World War II, the Germans made it illegal to display any Nazi iconography of any kind because they owned the horrors of the Holocaust. And of course, the problem in America is that we've never had the full reckoning that needed to happen when it comes to the horrors of slavery and Jim Crow. And we're finally having that reckoning because so many Americans believe a false narrative about the Civil War and about slavery. That's what's made this so difficult.
Absolutely. And we have that national context too, but we also have a very present local history. The Jacksonville Community Remembrance Project, which is one of the initiatives of 90 Forward, works to memorialize victims of terror lynchings that happened right here in Duval County. And out of the 8 people that we are memorializing as a part of that work, 5 of these victims were lynched in and around the 1920s, 1923, 1925, even 1919. So we have that history here locally of racial terror in the Jim Crow era, which is when the school name was selected in the first place. And so there is just this perpetuation of racial terror that continues to plague our city because we have not had that reckoning even here locally, in addition to nationally.
And let me quickly mention, people have asked about the cost of the name changes. The Jacksonville Public Education Fund has created a fund to collect private dollars that would pay for the changes to signs and such. You can go to their website at jackspath.org if you want to contribute to that. Let's go to Alan on the south side. Hi, Alan. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Welcome. Welcome back. I missed you while you were gone.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, my comment is that I like to look at this projecting yourself in the future and looking back. In history, it's just a matter of time this is going to happen, just like guns is going to happen, climate change is going to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Well, climate change is already happening.
We're going to solve the problem.
Oh, I see. Well, I hope so. I hope we solve the climate change problem. That's a big problem.
Yeah.
But, I think you're right, Alan. I think they will go ahead and change the names. Yeah.
Yeah. And may I make one more comment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry, I got a frog in my throat here. And And so I want to put this in another perspective. So I'm an engineer. One of the fundamental engineering equations is flow equals potential divided by resistance. I would argue God is all about potential. We won't talk about who's all about resistance, but in order to get the flow, in order to get things done, in order to get progress, it's all about potential. If you have infinite resistance, nothing gets done. And you think you know who's on the side of the resistance. We know who's on the side of the potential. So go with God. Okay.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for those thoughts. Lots of calls. Let's go now. Oh, Sandra Parks is on the line, the widow of Stetson Kennedy, of course. Stetson was a giant figure in the civil rights movement. Sandra, good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for taking my call this
morning. Of course.
Our family is completely supportive of changing the name of Robert E. Lee High School, and I'd like to explain why. Throughout his life, wherever Stetson spoke in the United States, when he would tell his story, it would start out by saying, I attended Robert E. Lee High School, not Lee High School, so someone might believe that the school was named after some other Lee, but Robert E. Lee High School, so that his audience would understand the irony that a white man who had been educated in a school with that name had not only risked his life to infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan, had spent all of his life fighting domestic terrorism, and was an outspoken supporter of social justice. Stetson would be horrified. He's been gone 10 years now. He would be horrified to know that 70% of the students at that school are African American. So our family has discussed this, and we urge the school board to change the name. Find some notable person. If Stetson were here today, I think he would unquestionably suggest that the school be named Alton Yates High School after the first African American to be a test pilot for NASA, after a man who was there for Axe Handle Saturday, a man who worked for economic opportunity in Jacksonville with that federal agency in his career. Let's find a more worthy person to name our schools after,
and you know,
someone we're ashamed of.
And you know, Sandra, apparently the policy for new school names specifies not naming a campus after a specific person. But I appreciate your suggestion, and it's so funny you called, because just the other day I was with a group of people, and your late husband's name came up, Stetson Kennedy, and there were a couple of people in the group who didn't know who he was and what he did. So I was explaining all about his legacy and how he exposed the Ku Klux Klan to all of America in the 1940s and 50s, and everything that he did to help further the cause of civil rights for African Americans. And how I had the opportunity to meet him just once before he passed away. And so it's just great to hear your voice this morning, because his legacy remains, and it's an important one that we need to make sure everybody knows about.
Well, thank you for giving time on the air for this issue this morning, because it is so important that the people that we commemorated, the things that we once thought were notable and worthy are no longer necessarily those we ought to cling to. So thank you very much for giving time to this issue.
You're welcome, Sandra. Thank you. And you know, Dr. Allen, it's interesting to point out that she suggested that the school be renamed after someone like Alton Yates, who was also an important civil rights figure. He is still alive, we need to say. But, you know, the school system has decided, no, we're not going to rename any of these schools after a specific person. Let's talk about the reasons why.
Yes, I think that is to to avoid having to have this discussion, you know, 60, 75 years from now, if something were to come out about individuals again. And I think New York is a place where, you know, it's, you know, public school number X, right, to kind of get in front of some of that. But But the students, again, the students have really offered up some really incredible options for the community and the school board to consider. One of them that I heard was SANCOFA, which is the concept of moving forward and reaching back to bring others along with you. And so, you know, if it's not a name, can it be at least a name that is inspiring and hopeful for where we want to be 50, 75, or 100 years from now?
John in Mandarin. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for your show today. Really good.
Thank you.
Things that are, I think, kind of missing from the conversation right now. You mentioned that there was a fund where people could make contributions, private contributions, to fund the name change. It was reported last week at the meeting that that fund had only raised $10,000, and it's about $200,000 per school. So times nine schools, that's a pretty big shortfall. And secondly, your guest mentioned that 70% of the students at Lee are African-American, but another interesting number is that 60% of the students do not live in the district and choose to go to Lee because it is a magnet school. So apparently they were not triggered or offended when asking to attend Lee. But I just thought those were things that were important for a fair and very fair conversation about this whole thing.
John, thanks. Dr. Allen.
Yes. So the fund that is created at the Jacksonville Public Education Fund, we are currently working with them to structure more public fundraising efforts. And we actually encourage any and everyone who wants to contribute to go ahead and contribute and even host your own fundraiser. The cost is not quite $200,000 per school. The elementary schools are considerably less because they don't have things like uniforms and gyms and things like that that they have to adjust. So the cost is quite a bit, I think, less than $200,000 for a number of those schools. But I definitely encourage everyone to visit jackspeff.org/renaming to contribute to the fund, because that is a way that we can show as a community that we support the efforts to rename these schools, whether it's $1, $10, $100, or $10,000. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to continue to share that.
And, you know, as we've discussed, the majority of the kids at the school are African American. What's your response to his comment that they didn't seem to be offended by the name in the past?
I think one of the things that we have to be mindful of is that when students are making choices, or their parents, rather, are making choices about what school to send them to, there's still the educational component that needs to be considered. If I am interested in a STEM program and this school offers a STEM program, ultimately I am there to get my education and I want to go this direction. It does not say that, you know, just because I want this particular focus in the magnet program, that because the school's name is X, I'm not going to go there, because, again, the primary focus is educational opportunity.
Lots of comments on social media, meanwhile, about the proposed school name changes in Duval as we speak with Dr. Kimberly Allen of 90 Forward. Tom writes, almost all of the opponents of the name change graduated when the school was still segregated. The speakers at these meetings have come from the classes of 59, 62, and 68. He says, race is definitely a factor in this opposition. The school wasn't really desegregated until the early 70s. Isn't that right, Dr. Allen? Brown versus Board of Education was decided in 1954, mm-hmm. but Lee didn't integrate till the 70s. Pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. We absolutely can't ignore the racial, right, the overt, in a lot of cases, racial tones that are present in these meetings. And I think it speaks volumes to exactly why the name should be changed.
Now, your organization is dedicated to combating racism in this city. The name changes, I think, are an important marker of moving forward. Your group is called 90 Forward, but you're working on a lot of other things too. Can you take a few minutes to talk about that?
Absolutely. We are still all and always and forever will be committed to having conversations about race in our city with any and everyone who wants to do that. We have the deck of race cards that you can go on 904.org to order. And we are also in the process of releasing the app for that. So stay tuned for that information. We also have the Jacksonville Community Remembrance Project, which I mentioned earlier, which is in partnership with Brian Stevenson's Equal Justice Initiative over in Montgomery, Alabama. And we are continuing to host soil collection ceremonies for victims of terror lynching. Our next event is on Sunday, May the 16th at 3 p.m., and it will be a virtual event. And we will host that ceremony, like I said, on the 16th at 3 p.m. virtually. So we will have registrations for that. And we also have, you know, we're going to continue to advocate in the case of name changes for the school, and we will continue to advocate as things come about around race in our cities so that we can continue to move forward.
Lots of tweets. Meanwhile, the Jack's Public Ed Fund tweets the show. More than 100 people have now generously given of their own dollars to help cover the costs of renaming schools that honor Confederates. You can learn more at jackspef.org/renaming. Here's a tweet from a listener. Robert E. Lee himself opposed the Confederate monuments and wanted people to stop flying the Confederate flag. He even wasn't buried in his Confederate uniform. He would not want a high school named after him, he says. One more tweet from a listener. It is beyond time to change the names and move forward. Learn from the past. Those stuck in the past need to support the next generation and move forward. So I want to thank you. She's Dr. Kimberly Allen, Executive Director of 90 Forward. Thank you so much for joining us this morning and continuing the conversation here on this show. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, Melissa. You too.
And much more still ahead. Later, another hot topic. Mayor Curry is letting Duval County's mask mandate expire at the end of the month. Why public health experts say that is a mistake. We will look at that in a few minutes, but up next.
So in Ireland, they'll knock two beers together and they'll say, sláinte, like, this is for you. And so that's what our practice is built around, being a part of a person's journey to their health.
Spotlighting one small business success, even in a time of pandemic. That's in our First Coast Success after this.
I'm David McGowan, CEO of WJCT Public Media, and I want to say a special thank you to everyone who gave during our pledge drive over the last few days. Thanks to you, we unlocked the match and reached our goal. It is your support that makes all we do possible, and we so appreciate it.
Welcome back. Well, small business has certainly had its challenges over the past year, but there are still plenty of owners out there doing well despite the pandemic. In today's First Coast Success, Karen Bruni Mathis of the Financial News and Daily Record speaks with Dr. Bridget Edkin, the Jack's Chamber Small Business Leader of the Year.
Bridget Edkin is a Jacksonville Beach chiropractor who has been in the business for 4 years. Jack's Chamber named her 2021's Small Business Leader of the Year. Dr. Edkin, welcome to First Coast Success.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us the name of your practice, and how did you determine that?
It's called Sláinte Chiropractic. It looks like slate, but it's a Gaelic word, and in Irish it means to your health. And so in Ireland, they'll knock two beers together and they'll say, sláinte, like, this is for you. And so that's what our practice is built around, being a part of a person's journey to their health.
And speaking of health, how has the business done through the pandemic? What is your strategy to survive that?
Well, thankfully, we were considered essential because we could help with people that way. But our strategy was, we're a relationship-based practice. And so about 50% pre-COVID was referrals from people who were within or from our networking. And so we just really focused inward on that and really creating an experience for our clients and making sure that they were enjoying getting the results that they wanted to, and then referring their friends and family. And that's how we kept alive.
What did Jack's Chamber focus on in determining who was going to be the 2021 Small Business Leader of the Year overall from the dozen council small business leaders?
So the Jack's Chamber focuses on someone who has faced diversity that and has had a business that has championed through things, that they're part of the community. And then we go through this rigorous process of creating a book all about our business. And then we have an interview. And the interview is what I was most excited about, because I got to meet last year's group of small business leaders. And they just got to ask us about our business and why we were so in love with being business in Jacksonville, and why that was so amazing. So I feel like that was, I really love what I do, and I really love the city, and I was called here by God, and that's why I think that they picked me.
Well, you initially didn't pursue becoming a chiropractor. What led you to the profession?
So I am a third generation chiropractor. I am the ninth in my family, and I just didn't want to do what everyone else in my family did. But as I was going through my life and I was very successful in a bunch of things that I did, I would always go to a chiropractor. And if anyone ever told me, hey, this is wrong with me, I'd be like, oh, you got to go get checked by a chiropractor. And I would refer so many people to the chiropractors I started relationships with. They would just take care of me, you know, for free, because they were like, you've brought me 25 new people. This is crazy. And your chiro kid, I have to take care of you. And so that, they were just like, why don't you just go be a chiropractor? So I took anatomy and physiology at a community college. I was like, let's see if this is hard for me or not. Crushed it and decided that was my sign from God to pursue the legacy of my family.
Well, what has been your biggest challenge?
Well, I think very challenging is to get married, open a practice, and have two babies all in 4 years, for sure. One of the biggest challenges is to be a good wife, a good mother, and a great business owner at the same time. But thankfully, I was raised in my mom's practice. Like, I was with her all the time, and our children are with us all the time. And while that's a challenge, it's also a really true blessing. And then, you know, being a business owner has its own individual things. Like, it's on you. Like, if there's a worldwide pandemic, you got to figure out how to make it work. There's no one else that's worrying about that. And so, you know, we put dinner on the table for a bunch of families of people that we take care of that work for us. And we're really passionate about maintaining that success, because we want to be a business that makes Jacksonville better.
What advice do you have for other entrepreneurs in Jacksonville, or those who are thinking about opening a business here?
Well, I would say do it. You know, you're always going to wonder what if, but if you don't try, you don't know. Jacksonville is one of the most incredible places I've ever been to, and I've lived all over the country. I'm from Iowa. I've lived in New York City. I lived in Maine, New Jersey, Rhode Island, all over the place. And I just, the people here are very genuine. They want you to succeed. People love local here. You know, it's very focused on that, and we focus on that in our practice. And so, if you need that, there's so many resources that the chamber provides, that the community provides to help people succeed, especially if you're a women business owner. You can really, really have a group of people cheering you on and that want you to succeed. There's no like, oh gosh, another chiropractor opened. I'm always excited for someone else, because that means more people can be served by chiropractic in my profession, let alone if there's another coffee shop or there's another restaurant. Like, we will go to every local restaurant Jacksonville can bring. We're ready.
Well, what's next for your practice?
So our goals are that we would have 3 locations throughout Jacksonville. That's kind of our 10-15 year plan, just because we want to be able to be in a proximity that most people drive over 45 minutes to an hour to get to us, since we're at the beach. But because of what we do and the technique that we utilize, people want that, and they want those results, so they travel. So I'd like to put them strategically throughout Jacksonville, so I could lower people's commute to be within 20-25 minutes max, which is, you know, where is it in Jacksonville? It's about 20 minutes away is the answer for everything. I'd like Solange Chiropractic to be that, and I'd like it to my children to become chiropractors and be the fourth generation and have a practice that they could walk into. That would be some of the things I dream of.
So you'll become a chain?
Yes.
Is it going to be easy to manage a chain?
Probably not, but we'll do it. And my husband and I are in a fantastic team, and I know that together we can do anything with God.
What else would you like to share?
Well, I would just like to say that this is the beginning of a beautiful year. And I think that everyone should really focus on what can happen instead of, you know, like the positives. Really wake up in the morning and say, today's going to be a great day. Because I think we got into a big slump of negativity in the last 365 days. You know, knowing that we're right here, the first live interview in about a year in this radio station is just insane to think about. But also, okay, we're coming back, and we can decide every day that today's going to be a great day and that we are going to put a smile on our face and bring joy to somebody else. And I think that's the most important thing we can do as humans. And I'm just so excited to have the opportunity to meet as many people as possible this year with this huge honor of being Small Business Leader of the Year. And our practice is just excited for that, to share what we love and know with as many people as possible.
Well, Bridget Edkin, thank you for being the first Coast success in a year since the pandemic. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, and thank you so much for having me.
Electro Lounge Radio around the clock. Allow the sounds of chill out, down tempo, new jazz, and reggae to relax and inspire you. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
BritBox and PBS Passport are now offering the best of all your favorite British drama, comedy, and more when you sign up at jacksbundle.com. Start watching today.
Well, here's the other big hot topic of the morning. After nearly a year of masking up, the face coverings are coming off in Duval County. Give us a call about the mask order expiring in Duval. It's 549-2937. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry has decided to let the county's mask mandate expire at the end of the month. Now, since June, the mayor had kept the mandate in place, renewing it month after month. The mandate required anyone over the age of 6 to continue wearing a face mask or face covering while they were in a public indoor space, including employees and customers at businesses within city limits. Now, the mandate in Duval had followed guidance from the Centers for Disease Control. The CDC says even after you get your vaccine, you should still wear a mask to prevent the potential spread of COVID-19. Now, here's the statement the mayor released. He said, quote, since the start of the pandemic, the decisions I've made have been based on data. I've worked with hospital leadership, researchers, emergency management, and more to make decisions that will help keep our community safe. At this time, based on the data, I have decided to lift the mask mandate that requires masks be worn indoors in public spaces where you could not be 6 feet apart. The mayor says even though he's lifting the mandate, businesses can still require customers to wear masks. Many businesses say they will continue to do that. Here's a statement from the Duval County Medical Society. They say, quote, while we understand that the mask mandate for Duval County has expired, the Duval County Medical Society and its foundation strongly encourage continued social distancing, mask wearing, and hand washing as ways to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. And they encourage everyone to get a vaccination as soon as you're eligible. In Duval County, 92,000 people and change have been diagnosed with coronavirus as of Friday, and we have had 1,287 deaths. The mayor scrapping the mask order is in line with what's happening around the country. Many states are starting to drop their mask mandates, like Arizona, Texas, Mississippi, Iowa, Wyoming, Montana. In the coming weeks, a few other states will drop their mask order. Now, we need to point out that Florida is one of just a handful of states where mask wearing was not mandated at all, either at the state or the local levels. And so what we saw was cities like Jacksonville, Orlando, Miami, Tampa, putting mask orders in place, but really without a lot of enforcement. Governor DeSantis would actually cancel the fines that were levied against people in some cities that were ticketed for violating local mask orders. So give us a quick call. Let us know what you think about the decision by the mayor to end Duval County's mask order after nearly a year. Here's an email from Mary. I find it ironic that Jacksonville is lifting the mask mandate when many people are still not eligible to get the vaccine. A few more months, more shots in arms, and we will finally be close to herd immunity. Lifting the mask mandate now is just more political play with our health and safety. 549-2937, Agnes on the South Side. Agnes, good morning.
Good morning, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. I don't agree at all with the mayor's decision to lift the mask mandate. I mean, yes, you would hope that people would still go ahead and observe all the mitigations that you need to do, but that just doesn't happen sometimes. They need some encouragement. I agree with the governor when he opened up the state too early. I don't agree with the, with this now because we saw what happened back then. And we just don't need to do that. We need to go ahead and let these vaccinations get a percentage of the people vaccinated and then see where it goes. We still just, you know, we just don't know that it's safe to take off the masks yet.
Thanks, Agnes. Thank you for that. Getting lots of emails saying the same. Here's one from Robert. Why not wait one more month to lift the mandate until people have had the chance to get the vaccine? What's the downside, he says. Charles on the West Side. Hi, Charles.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. I went to Publix yesterday. I've had both my vaccines, and I'm still wearing my mask, and so was my mom. And I went to Publix, and I was standing in customer service line, and there was a guy, only one guy I saw without a mask, and it was a young fella. So I think it's too early to take it off.
Yeah,
we definitely need to stay masked up until Dr. Fauci or somebody like that says, you know, hey, it's all right. You know,
and it's good to hear,
so
Charles, that you're
Lenny is taking his cue from Tallahassee. And, you know,
thanks for that, Charles. And, you know, it's good to hear that you're still masking up even after being vaccinated. That's a question we get all of the time from people. Can I take my mask off after the vaccine? And the public health folks say, no, please keep wearing the mask. And thank you for that, Charles. It's good to hear. It's good to hear most people were masked at your local Publix. And of course, as I mentioned, a lot of local business owners across Duval County say they will continue to require mask wearing in their stores. We have heard some, you know, anecdotal tales of local business owners getting into confrontations with customers who don't want to put on a mask when they enter a business. These businesses have the right to refuse you service if you don't comply with their preferences. So, you know, just be respectful of that. Marty in Bay Meadows. Hi, Marty. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa.
Go ahead. We're almost to a break. Go ahead.
I think if that if the mayor's facts were based in science and reason and not politically driven, then, you know, if he says he's got data, I don't know who he's talking to, but it seems very politically driven and not based in science and reason.
Thanks, Marty, for that. Again, the mask mandate for Duval County is expiring at the end of March, but be mindful. Many local businesses will still ask you to wear a mask, so keep your masks with you when you go out and about. And, you know, order or no order, we know that masks stop the spread or slow the spread of this disease, so keep wearing your mask. And in a moment, how one local organization is using team sports with kids to combat racism. We'll be right back.
I'm David McGowan, CEO of WJCT Public Media, and I want to say a special thank you to everyone who gave during our pledge drive over the last few days. Thanks to you, we unlocked the match and reached our goal. It is your support that makes all we do possible, and we so appreciate it.
The work of Florida sculptor Charles Adrian Pillars can be seen in Jacksonville's Memorial Park and in Statuary Hall at the nation's capital. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Pillar's biographer, Wayne Wood. We'll discuss editors of the Florida Historical Quarterly, past and present, and Gullah Geechee culture. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, the amazing lives of migratory birds. Author Scott Wiedensahl talks about the millions of birds flying unseen over our heads in the night sky, how the bar-tailed godwit can fly more than a week over water without stopping, and how new tracking technology may help with strategies to keep them alive. His new book is A World on the Wing. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
It's up to a jury to decide whether to convict the man charged for killing 8 people, including 6 Asian women, in Atlanta. Many have already concluded the gunman's motive was race or misogyny, but does it have to be one or the other? What stops us from thinking about both of them at once? The force behind the debate on intersectionality, Kimberly Crenshaw, joins me next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, earlier in the show, we talked about the effort to rename local schools. One man is using soccer to promote anti-racism education with kids. I spoke with Jay Gollum of SCAR. That is the Soccer Coalition Against Racism. Hi, Jay. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to be with you.
It's timely to talk about what you're doing with the Soccer Coalition Against Racism in light of the fact that schools are undergoing a renaming process. This is a community-wide conversation. You formed the Soccer Coalition using soccer as a platform to bring about change and fight systemic racism in Jacksonville. How is that working?
It's working wonderfully well. We started this back in the summer after all the protests and the incidents that were going on, feeling a need to do more than just put Black Lives Matter up on our website. We have a soccer program that's been going on in Jacksonville for quite a while called Coastal Kick Soccer. And we are a nonprofit that's very interested in taking soccer all over the city, especially to areas that can't afford to pay the exorbitant prices of organized youth soccer these days. So we have been doing those efforts. We really stepped them up in the summer, forming this this organization called the Soccer Coalition Against Racism, which acronym is SCAR, and that's what we've been going by. And it really is just what you said. It's trying to establish soccer programs, free soccer programs, in some of the most needy areas of the city. More than just that, to use that as a platform to attack some of the systemic discrimination issues that still go on to this day here in Jacksonville.
So you've been doing free soccer programming at the Bob Hayes Legends Center in Northwest Jacksonville. You'll be expanding on that this spring. And then will there be other activities besides the actual game?
So our program is similar to what we do at Coastal Kicks in that it is primarily a training ground. Basically, once a week, we offer programs that are like rec-level soccer training programs. We do that once a week at the Legend Center on Wednesdays, and we've been doing that since the fall. We've had a fall season, a winter season, and are just next week starting our spring season. And as you said, in the spring, we hope to expand to some other sites. Also, at the Legend Center, we do have game day on Saturdays. So it's growing into a two-day-a-week program where they train on one day a week and then have games to play on Saturdays.
That's great. Now, you've also stated your mission is to provide programming targeting critical areas, including voter registration and access.
police accountability, supporting minority-owned businesses, removing Confederate monuments, and so forth. How are you working on those initiatives?
We had a voter registration booth set up. This was when, you know, prior to the election, obviously. So while we were there, we had a voter registration booth, and we tried to register as many people as we could on the spot during the tournament as people were coming and watching what was going on. We also had several minority-owned food trucks that were there, and we continue to do that with any big event that we have at Legend Center or and we'll have at our other sites, where we give minority-owned businesses an opportunity to come in and basically, you know, sell their wares, make some money. We don't ask for any rental or any percentage of their proceeds. It's just an opportunity for them to sell their products and thereby help
in that regard. Yeah.
We are in the process of establishing a SCAR Foundation. One of the things that distinguishes our program is that we're putting a lot of effort into the sustainability component for these efforts. We and other people have done some good work in this regard with soccer and in other areas in the past, but they've all been short-lived. And the reason is money, basically. There's only so much you can do when you're asking people to volunteer to do these sorts of things. And in the past, we've had trouble maintaining these programs. So a key element to SCAR is, as I said, its sustainability component, where we are building a SCAR foundation that hopefully will raise sufficient funds that we can expand our programs and continue them year after year, season after season, so that we're continuing to provide the free soccer opportunities, but also give us opportunities to serve as a platform for some of these more serious community-wide devastating issues that we're trying to fight.
Sure. Check it out online, the Soccer Coalition Against Racism, Executive Director Jay Gollum. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you very much for your time.
And thanks for listening today, and thanks to all of our guests and callers, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, news director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bordsfield. And you, the listener, keep your feedback coming by emailing us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Catch our podcast later today wherever you like to listen or through the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.